It's Grip back with the Get a Grip podcast. We just finished talking about Eminem's new album as we continue to talk about music. As I mentioned, Eminem, I think, is an excellent artist, but needs to up the production, and I love to see him work with some awesome producers. There are a lot of, living in Atlanta, there are a lot of, on the musical scene, there are a lot of artists who want to be independent and think independent is the best route to take. And I love to see, you know, my brothers and sisters going after this whole new independent route and producing and owning their own music and not having to depend on labels to support their projects or to even release their projects. I think it's a beautiful movement. If you don't know my background, as I mentioned on the first episode of Get a Grip podcast, I do have a law degree. I practiced in the entertainment field as well as the corporate field for a while. And I've helped some clients, some labels, some independent artists, some artists signed to labels. And one of the things that you have to understand as an independent artist, I'm going to give you some of this free advice. You're lucky I'm not charging you for this. So take this in. But one of the things that you have to understand as an independent artist in today's music industry is that it's a sacrifice. It's a big sacrifice. It's difficult. It's not easy. I mean, it takes a lot of resources. It takes a lot of hard work. Everybody is not going to be Chance the Rapper. Chance the Rapper has done everything independently up until this point. He doesn't depend on the label for marketing. He doesn't depend on the label for distribution. He doesn't depend on the label for anything. He has done all of his music, done all of his projects independently. And that takes a lot of resources. It takes a lot of capital. What a lot of artists don't understand is how expensive it is. It's not cheap to be an independent artist. And you have to pay for studio time, you have to pay for marketing, you have to pay for distribution, you have to pay your legal team to make sure that everything's structured properly. All these things cost money, and a lot of the new independent artists don't understand. They say, oh, I want to be independent, I want to, you know, maintain ownership of all of my content and my music, and I'm gonna do this in the independent route, not understanding the sacrifice and the type of money that you have to invest in these independent projects. So it's great to have that dream of being independent, and you should pursue that dream if that's what you want to do. But there's also another avenue of being independent but only using the label for what you need them for. Because of technology, the music industry has changed so much that you can set up your own company. You can, you know, release music free through SoundCloud and, you know, on your website or other, you know, audio services that are provided throughout the web. Build a buzz for yourself, and then maybe possibly do a joint venture with a label where you use the label only for distribution and for marketing, where there's a 50-50 deal, or maybe a 60-40 deal, or even a 70-30 deal, depending on how much buzz you've created for yourself. So there are avenues to remain independent, where you may have to give up a small percentage of your business or even a large percentage, depending on where you are and how much work you've put in initially. So that label may come in and say, hey, look, you've done a tremendous amount of work. You have millions of people listening to your music, and we just need to come in and support you. And they may give you a recording budget and things of that nature to help you, but you can still control your circumstances as to how much percentage you give up for the help that they're providing. So to all my independent artists out there, call us. If you have questions, hopefully I can answer them and help you try to get you on the right path. Again, it's about Black excellence in 2018. I want to see ownership. I want to see us be great. But understand that it's not free. You got to get out here and you have to spend some bread. It's not free for people to be providing their services and helping your career along. You have to be ready to invest in yourself. And if you want to go independent, be ready to invest a substantial amount of money into yourself, into your project, and then you can watch your project shine and be big. We're going to talk about my top five rappers of all time coming up next. Let's go. I was just recently listening to Joe Budden and Charlamagne. They did their year-end wrap-up. It was called This Year Was Dope / Trash. It was on Revolt TV. Big shout out to Charlamagne and Joe Budden. I was watching that program, and obviously, you know, all these year-end wrap-ups, they do, you know, top five best MCs, top five hottest artists, top five, you know, media moments, all of these different things that they do at the end of the year. And it's always been a great debate to me, especially being as into music like I am, is the top five MCs of all time. Now, I'm going to give you guys my list, and I want to hear you guys' comments and hear you guys, whatever you have to say about my list. But this is my list. I own it. I think it's the best list out there. You can debate me. I don't want to hear from anybody who only started listening to music in 2002 or who was born in 1996. I don't want to hear from you because there's a lot of MCs that you missed that you can't really speak about unless you've really been in tune with music and you've gone back and listened to those artists. So I'm going to start my list off. I'm going to do it in this order from 5 to 1. And in my list, number five, my number five MC would be Andre 3000. Now, a lot of people will debate that and say, you know, how can he be in your top five? Well, listen, I think Andre 3000 lyrically is one of the most gifted MCs out there. And he's a Southern rapper. And you have to understand, when Outkast became popular, Southern artists weren't getting the kind of love that they are now. You know, the rap game was a New York City based industry. And if you were not, you know, one of those big New York rappers, it was seen that you may not be as prevalent lyrically as some of those other guys. But go back and listen to Andre 3000's catalog, and I don't really think this will be an argument as to why he would be number five on my particular list as one of the top MCs of all time. Now, number four on my list is going to be Big Daddy Kane. Now, the reason I say Big Daddy Kane is because most of your rappers from 90 to 2005 took their style from Big Daddy Kane. He kind of changed the style of being an MC to where you could talk about flash and women and cars, but he was so very lyrical with it that, you know, a lot of today's hot rappers or a lot of rappers from my generation in the 1990s attributed their style to Big Daddy Kane. Again, go back and listen to his catalog of music, and I think you'll definitely understand where I'm coming from when I have Big Daddy Kane as number four. Number three on my list is Nas, Nasty Nas. Nas obviously has been one of the best lyricists of our generation. Illmatic was one of the best hip-hop albums ever created. And the storytelling that Nas has always possessed is what has transformed hip-hop in a sense. He was such an excellent storyteller and could put you in that position of where you thought you were there when you heard him rap about Queens and about Queensbridge and about, you know, being at the barbecue with Main Source, and I mean, live at the barbecue, I mean, it was just so nice, and so lyrical, and such, again, such a great storyteller, that in a lot of ways Nas was ahead of his time, and still, you know, in some ways doesn't get the appreciation that he deserves. So number three on my list is Nas. So that I have Andre 3000 is number five. I have Big Daddy Kane as number four. I have Nas as number three. Now, in the next segment, we're going to get into my top two. And, you know, a lot of people probably already know who those two may be, but you may not. You may be surprised. And when I'm talking about top five MCs, I'm talking about mostly lyricism, mostly your lyrical ability on the mic. Not really talking about, you know, other things outside of your lyrics, but cultural impact does play a part. Get ready for my top two. my top two MCs of all time. I know you guys have been patiently awaiting what this top two is going to be. So here it comes. Number two on my list. Let me go back up. Before that, okay? Let me review. I'm doing the top five MCs. This is my list. Obviously, this is one of the most debated topics in music, especially amongst hip-hop heads and people who are heavy into hip-hop like myself and have been for years. So this is my list of top five, and I'm going to give you a quick review. At number five, I had Andre 3000, one of the artists who I believe was able to change the way that people view Southern hip-hop artists. At number four, I had Big Daddy Kane, one of the MCs who I believed developed the style for a lot of the 90s and early 2000s rappers. Number three, I had Nas, who again is one of the most gifted lyricists of all time and made such a heavy cultural impact with his Illmatic album that it changed the landscape of hip-hop. Number two is the one and only Jay-Z. Jay-Z to me is obviously has the body of work to prove why he would be number two on my list. But he also has the ability to switch styles, which makes him very unique. You look at Jay-Z from Reasonable Doubt to Jay-Z at 444, and you look at how he has been able to be culturally relevant lyrically throughout that entire time span from 1996 to 2017. He's been able to be lyrically relevant, not just culturally relevant, which he has been, but he's been able to be lyrically relevant and have topics that we're still interested in throughout that time span, and that speaks to his ability as a lyricist, and that's why I have him as number two on my list. But Jay-Z is not only become an amazing artist, but he's become obviously an amazing businessman. He's been able to be a significant cultural icon. So, as I mentioned, my list is primarily based on lyricism, your ability on the microphone to put together dope verses. That's my first and primary criteria. But also, I look at your impact on the culture. And that's why I say, Andre 3000, in giving Southern rappers legitimacy, Big Daddy Kane influencing different rapper styles, Nas, with his storytelling ability and the album that really put other rappers on notice, and now Jay-Z with his longevity, with his ability to be lyrically relevant over such a long span of time. Number one on my list is the Notorious B.I.G., Biggie Smalls, Frank White. You know who he is. And to me, there's no debating this. If you go back and listen to Ready to Die, and you go back and listen to Life After Death, and you just listen to Biggie be able to put words and lines together, it's amazing to me how some of the songs that Biggie dropped in 1994, I believe, when Ready to Die came out, maybe 95, when Ready to Die came out, it will still be a hit today. And you go back and listen to Life After Death, and he just, again, a great storyteller, but also somebody who could put together lyrics that were funny, put together, great songs, make great guest appearances on Total Can't You See, and on Dolly My Baby, and just on Mary J. Blige songs. Just one of the most gifted lyricists of all time, to me, is Biggie Smalls. Now, a lot of people will debate this. A lot of people may put Jay-Z number one because of his longevity. A lot of people may put Nas number one because of, how Illmatic changed the landscape of hip-hop. But for me, growing up during that time and being a hip-hop fanatic during that time, Biggie is number one on my list. Greatest lyricist of all time. If you want to debate it, hit us up. Get a Grip Podcast. You know what it is. We're going to keep it moving, give you some entertainment.
So let's get right into some entertainment news. It's been a crazy 2017 for entertainment news. Several different crazy storylines. I think the number one storyline, which really happened at the last quarter of 2017, was the sexual allegations or the sexual abuse allegations that were all over the place. You know, obviously starting with Harvey Weinstein, and I spoke about these a little bit in the first episode, but there's always somebody new that's being accused or alleged of misconduct. And Tavis Smiley has been one of the newest people who've been accused of, you know, misconduct when it came to, you know, dating women on that were a part of his show or having relations with subordinates. And it was funny, I saw him in an interview, and he his response was kind of like, well, who else am I supposed to date, or who else am I supposed to see? I haven't done anything wrong. And in some ways I can understand it, because, you know, if you work in that environment, you're probably there, you spend a lot of time there, you devote a lot of hours to your program, you know, you probably spend a lot of time researching, and so that probably is where you meet a lot of people. But the flip side of that is, if they're your subordinates, you kind of know, I think there's kind of that unspoken rule, okay, look, I can't be having sex with my subordinates, you know, I can't be out here sleeping with people that I work with, because these type of things can occur. I don't know if they're true, I don't know what kind of truth come with these allegations at all, but when you put yourself in that position, then these things can happen, and, you know, relationship may have gone bad. You know, he may have, you know, stopped calling somebody, or vice versa. He may have been stalking, so who knows? But you don't put yourself in that position when you're in a position of power like he is. And you have your own show, and, you know, it's just, I think, you know, the old guard has to understand that things are different now. I mean, you can't speak to women in a joking manner like you could before. You can't, you know, have women in compromising positions like you could before and think that you can get away with it in 2017. Women are much more empowered now. They have much larger platforms and larger voices, and, you know, they have equal positions and pay and a lot of areas of business, and not in all areas, but in a lot of areas. So it's just different, and I think we're going to continue to see more and more, or hear about more and more of these allegations, just because of, you know, the old guard is kind of leaving. They're kind of, you know, filtering out or aging themselves out, and their way, they still have their ways, and so I think they're going to be more and more women who feel empowered to speak out about some misconduct that has happened in the workplace. But, you know, it was interesting to hear Tavis Smiley and his response, and how he's fighting it. And I think if you feel like you're innocent, if you feel like you really haven't done anything wrong when it comes to misconduct, you should fight it. But I guess it'll all kind of play itself out as we go. You know, just, hey, look, fellas, if you're in the workplace, it's just a nice head nod and you keep it moving. You know, these days it's crazy. You can't even shake a girl's hand at your job these days. It's like, look, hey, how you doing? Yep, good to see you. I'm keeping it moving, because you do not want these problems. It's everywhere now. So another big entertainment news story that I heard was, and that I saw, I guess everybody's, not everybody, but a lot of people have been talking about it in the entertainment world, is the Ocean's 8 movie release. Kind of the remake of Ocean's 11 with an all-female cast. And it's cool. Kind of got a different storyline. Same plot, but, you know, just a different storyline. It's going to be interesting to see how well it does. A lot of big-time female actors, including Rihanna. Big shout-out to Rihanna. But it's going to be interesting to see kind of how it does in theaters, seeing that it is kind of a revamp of a story that we've seen several times, just with a different cast. So I'm interested to see how it plays out in the theater. Talking about sneakers coming up next, get a grip.
For those of you who don't know or haven't listened to the Get a Grip podcast, I'm a huge sneakerhead. I love sneakers. I've been collecting sneakers for more than 20 years now. Kind of goes back to my basketball background. I played in high school, played in college. So sneakers have always been a part of my life. You know, having the freshest sneakers, being able to play ball in the freshest sneakers has kind of always been a part of who I am. And it's continued even today. I'm still into sneakers, and I just love the way they look. I love the different styles. I'm a big retro guy, so I just love sneakers. I love sneakers. I'm a Nike guy. Nike's probably no doubt is my favorite brand. Love Jordans, only certain models. We'll talk about that in a minute. But Adidas, you know, has had a big year last year, and well, last 2 years, 16 and 17, they've come a long way with the addition of Yeezy and Pharrell and other prominent people that they brought on board to collab with. So the sneaker industry has really become a culture now. It's huge. I mean, if you have kids who are teenagers or almost teenagers, then you know what I'm talking about. There's a release every week. I mean, some of these kids have become millionaires reselling shoes online. So it's really become an entire culture now, and it's interesting to see how it's changed. I remember growing up and being able to go into a Foot Locker or Champs, and there were Jordans on the sale rack. I mean, some of your more popular models, your Jordan 1s, your Jordan 3s, you could find them on the sale rack. And now, I mean, they sell out in a matter of hours, especially if it's a limited release. So it's been interesting to see how this culture has changed over time. And I'm still, you know, look, I still spend a lot of money on sneakers. I just do. And I probably always will. I'll probably be 60 years old trying to get a new pair of Jordans. Let's hope not. But look, if I am, you know, by that time, who knows what the culture will look like. But this is 2018 is going to be, you know, another big year in the sneaker culture. There are a lot of big sneaker releases that are dropping this year. My favorite shoe of all time, or my favorite Jordan, the Air Force One is my favorite shoe of all time, my favorite model, but my favorite Jordan of all time is re-releasing this year, and that's the Black Cement 3, and it's re-releasing with the Nike Air branding on it, and that hasn't been done in almost 20 years, I think 17 years since they've re-released the shoe over time, but it had the Jumpman logo on the back, the Jordan logo that everybody knows and is familiar with. But this new release has the Nike Air original branding, and that's a big deal for people in the sneakers because we want the original look. We want the original feel. If you're going to do a retro, let's make it as close to the original as possible. And this is the first time we'll be getting that on the Black Cement 3, so I'm super excited about that release. I'm going to be picking up, you know, at least two pair of those for my personal collection. So I'm really excited about that. I think that shoe comes out in February. So I'm really excited about that drop. The Air Jordan 1, they're doing a lot of different things with the Air Jordan 1 this year. A lot of different interesting releases that they're doing that a lot of people are excited about. Adidas is continuing the whole Yeezy craze. I'm not a huge fan of the Yeezy silhouette. But I can respect what Yeezy does. I can respect his brand. I really respect his vision when it comes to creating for the brand and how he partnered with Adidas to be able to do his own thing. And obviously the shoe has grown extremely in popularity. I do like what Adidas has done with the NMD. It's kind of one of their new lifestyle models. Very comfortable shoe. Adidas has the Boost technology and mostly everything that they put out these days. But it's really comfortable, really stylish. Pharrell's doing great collaborations with, you know, his Human Race line and with some of the things that he's doing with the NMD, with Adidas as well. So, look, we'll talk sneakers more and more on the Get a Grip podcast. Again, that's part of my life, part of my lifestyle. I want you guys to comment on what your favorite release is, what you're looking forward to in 2018 when it comes to sneaker releases. What's your feeling on the culture today? Do you feel like it's whack because it's too difficult to get shoes, or you know, it's too popular, so it's become corny? Let us know. Get a grip.
It's Get a Grip, back with our final segment of episode 2 of the Get a Grip podcast. And in this final segment, I'm going to talk about a topic that is near and dear to all of us, and it's relationships. If you listen to episode 1, you know that, you know, we're always going to end the Get a Grip podcast talking about relationship issues and things that affect people's relationships, because relationships are the most important things in your life. It's not money, it's not fame, it's not, you know, whatever level of success that you feel you've achieved. It's your relationships. Those are the things that bring out the emotions in all of us, are the relationships that we have with family, friends, loved ones, whatever it may be. So today, I want to delve into this whole online dating phenomenon. Technology has changed the way that we live, and it's changed the way that we meet people. And whether it's Facebook, whether it's, you know, Instagram, hitting people up in their DMs, whether it's sending people a tweet, whether it's Tinder, whether it's Plenty of Fish, whether it's Match, whether it's Christian's Mingle. I've seen a farmer's online dating site. I've seen an online dating site for senior citizens. And I mean, now I'm not sure about that. I don't know if I want to see a 65-year-old, you know, profile pic. And, you know, I don't know that. That's not my steez, but I guess if you're 80, that may work for you, you know what I mean? But even older men, they want younger women, so I don't know how that works, but, you know, I digress. But online dating, it's a very interesting phenomenon to me, because I can see it in two different ways. First of all, obviously, it's just another way to meet people. People are busy. People have busier lives. People have busier schedules. People are not out as much, especially, I guess, as you get older. Maybe you're not out as much. You're not in the clubs or in the lounges or going to parties and all these things. Not that that's the only place you can meet people, but you know what I mean. You're just not out as much meeting and greeting people like you probably were when you were younger. So online dating just gives you another avenue to be on your phone, be on your computer, and just meet people. It also gives you a way to weed out people. Because it really is, if you're online dating, let's not front, it's based on appearance first. Because you don't know this person, you know. This person could have pictures up from 10 years ago. And they could be, you know, in the picture that they put up from 10 years ago, they could be 110 pounds. And now you look, and this girl, you meet her, and she's 270. So you just don't know. But so everything is appearance based. So at least it allows you to be like, okay, I can message or talk to people who at least I feel are initially attractive to me. I don't care if you're a man or a woman. That's online dating initially has to be based on if you're attracted to the way that they look, because you don't know what the person's personality is. Now, as you message them, you're still getting that person's representative, because obviously they're trying to impress you. You're trying to impress them. You know, this person may have said, this dude may say, look, I'm an astronaut, and, you know, he may work for UPS. You just don't know. You know, but it does kind of give you somewhat of a vetting process that, you know, maybe can cut down on the number of failures, so to speak. But it's on the flip side of that. The second portion of that is that you can meet some crazy folks. I mean, you don't know these people. And in order to really get to build a relationship, you eventually have to meet this person. That's what I don't understand about people really lying online or putting up false pictures or saying that you do this job. Now, the job thing you could probably hide for a little while. But if you put up pictures of yourself that are not really a representation of you today, what do you think is going to happen when you meet that person? It's probably not going to go how you like, because it's false advertising. You're putting out a product that really isn't reflective of what I'm buying today. Now, maybe if I was buying that product 10 years ago, you may have looked that way. But today, I'm not buying that product. So it's false advertising. I don't understand that. But we'll get more into online dating as we continue Get a Grip. back with Get a Grip, talking about online dating. It's the new phenomenon, the new wave of meeting people. And as I was talking about in the previous segment, it's, you know, there's two sides to this online dating phenomenon. I mentioned the first side, and I was getting into the second side of people false advertising. And it happens, I guess, you know, in some ways it happens in every avenue of you meeting somebody. If you met them at the grocery store, you know, they could tell you a false story there as well. But at least you're kind of meeting face to face and can see body language, facial expressions, and all those things that are still important, even though online dating has become so prevalent. But, you know, it's there are people who have great success stories of online dating, who have met their spouses and they've been happily married for years. And then there's people who've crashed and burned, and, you know, met people who've been crazy as hell and, you know, stalked them and, you know, stole their car and their credit information and, you know, all type of stuff. So, you know, I view online dating as just another means to meet people. In today's technological society, it's made it easy for some people, but you know, you still have to be really wary of online dating, and of course, you know, you have to be, especially if you're a woman, you have to be careful of who you're out here meeting, you know, because it could be dangerous. It's crazy Negroes out here. You don't know what these niggas gonna be doing from day to day, or how they gonna act when you meet them. So you gotta be careful. I mean, you gotta try to do as much vetting as possible. And then, are there rules for online dating? You know, look, Get a Grip community, y'all help me out, because you know, I'm not a, you know, big online dater. So are there rules for online dating? You know, is there, you know, can't give your phone number out until after a certain number of messages are, because I'm thinking, look, if I'm meeting you online, I don't want to keep messaging you through this app, or, you know, DMing you or sending you tweets. Eventually, I want to get your phone number, I want to call you, and I want to meet you as soon as possible so I can make sure that the product is representative of what I'm seeing. I don't want to waste your time, and of course, I don't want you to waste mine. So I want to see physically what I'm working with. I want to make sure that you look good in those jeans, like you look in that picture, and that, you know, you got all your teeth, and, you know, that, you know, your weave is done right, you know, all those things. I want to make sure it's tight. So I don't know, what are the rules? You know, help us out, call in, let us know what the rules to online dating are, so we can help other people. We want to help the Get a Grip community with this whole online dating phenomenon. And is this just going to be the new wave? Eventually, it's just going to be the way that people meet, is through online. I'm old school, I still like meeting people out and about, but hey, maybe this is just a new wave in the way that things are going. Another thing that, you know, when it comes to relationships, a lot of more of what I'm seeing and getting feedback on is interracial relationships. Obviously, we're at a different time. It's in the 1960s, the 70s. I mean, we're much more accepting of interracial relationships. My sister is married to a white guy. One of my sisters was married to a Mexican. So, you know, look, you love who you love. And, you know, race doesn't really play a part in what I feel is what can make a successful relationship. Now, I do love black women. That's just my preference. Doesn't mean that I hate against this. It's fine, you know, Hispanic women. Yes, there are some extremely fine Hispanic women, but they black like us to me. So I include them in the nigga pool. That, you know, Hispanics, they black like us. But there's some attractive white women, you know, but that's just not my preference when it comes to who I would like to spend my life with. It probably, you know, it's gonna be a black woman. So, but in the racial relationship, you still see some of the kickback when it comes to interracial dating and interracial relationships. Not in your more metropolitan areas, because I think it's become more acceptable, more accepted that this is going to happen. But, you know, you still do see sly comments here and there about interracial dating.
We're back. It's Get a Grip Podcast. Coming back to you talking about interracial relationships. I'm eating a cookie, so y'all bear with me. Interracial relationships. It's become obviously more prevalent, more accepted. You know, the Kardashians have kind of made it mainstream where, you know, a lot of these white women, they gotta have some brothers now. So it's, you know, you see it on TV, you know, you see it in commercials. And you're seeing more and more commercials with, you know, interracial couples and interracial families. And you know, I'm always, in some ways, not in everything, but in some ways, I'm a conspiracy theorist. And I feel like, okay, you're seeing these interracial couples, and is this, you know, the media trying to portray or negate the traditional black family by having more interracial couples? Or is this just the media trying to be more reflective of today's society? I don't know. But I like to see black families in commercials. You know, is there a problem with having an all-black family, a black, you know, black dad, black mom, black kids in a Mazda commercial? And not saying that there's not. I'm just saying that there seems to be somewhat of a shift when it comes to marketing and advertising of including more interracial couples in their marketing and advertising campaigns. And I don't know what that means specifically, but that's just kind of, you know, it gives me that feeling. But again, 2018 is the year of black excellence. And so for me, it's about seeing my people being represented across all platforms. And when it comes to relationships, I think that, you know, you don't really, you know, control, or in some ways you do, but you know, you can love whoever you want, black, white, green, yellow, I don't care. It doesn't bother me when I see a black woman with a white guy, or see a white woman with a black man with a white woman. And that doesn't bother me. It is what it is. I think it bothers more of our sisters to see a black man with a white woman, especially when he's successful, which I think there's a double standard there, because, you know, they have movies made about black women dating white guys, and you women are like, oh, look, you know, get yours, girl, get yours, you know, bump these niggas, you know, that's your sentiment. But when it's on the flip side, look at this nigga selling out, gotta go get him a Becky, you know, it's just, I think it's a double standard there. And I don't know if that's because some of our more successful African-American men have, you know, married white women, whether they're athletes or entertainers. Not all of them. I mean, I think you still got your J's and your B's, and, you know, Diddy is with Cassie now, even though he flips back and forth, not between white women, but, you know, Diddy's with Cassie, and you know, you have, you know, some of your Denzel and his beautiful black wife. And so, I mean, you have, you know, really popular, strong, Will and Jada, you know, real strong examples of popular black couples that are still out there. But I think, you know, maybe some of our sisters are jaded because some of those athletes and entertainers do marry the white woman, you know, Kanye and Kim, and, you know, we look at other examples of some of our more popular figures bringing white women into their world as their significant others. But sisters, look, you know, I love you. You know, there's nothing better to me than a black woman, even though y'all can be crazy as hell sometimes. But there's nothing better to me. But don't hate on the brothers who find love amongst our Caucasian women. Because look, they trying to get big asses like y'all too. They getting the shots, the whole nine. You know, they want to be fine. You know, they may not be able to cook like you all, but hey, they may, you know, they trying to ingratiate the look, you know. So don't hate on the, and brothers, if you're going to go to the other side, make sure she fine. You know, don't do us wrong. Go get you one of the finer ones. We out. See you next time. Get a grip. Welcome back to the Get a Grip podcast. Excited about having you guys back for another episode of our wonderful podcast. It's a new year. It's 2018. And hopefully everybody had a happy holidays, had a great new year, and they're excited about their plans for the future, for this new year. You know, everybody says new year, new me. Well, we'll see about that. I'm just excited to continue to bring you this content, and hopefully you guys are excited about listening, and you will see that in your comments, and we'll see that as additional people come on board and start to listen and enjoy this podcast. I'm excited about the direction. As you guys know, if you've listened to the first episode of this podcast, we cover a lot of different topics in the Get a Grip podcast, and you know, we like to keep it fun, we like to keep it exciting and informative, but most importantly, we just want to have a good time and want people to enjoy the Get a Grip podcast. I'm Grip, and I'm back for this new year, and I'm going to bring you more and more for this new year. There's a lot of things that are happening in 2018 that I'm excited about, a lot of content that I want to share with you guys, a lot of things that we can talk about, and I want to get you guys ideas about content as well. If there's something that you want to hear me talk about and you want a direction where you can see the podcast going, let me know, and add your comments, and we'll try to include some of those suggestions into what we do on a weekly basis. We're going to start to bring you content every week. Again, we talk about sports, we talk about music, we talk about entertainment, we get into relationship issues. We want to cover a wide variety of topics because I'm a multifaceted person. So I want to cover everything that I'm interested in. I want this to be an outlet for me to be able to cover those topics and to get your insight and to include you. We're going to even have some special guests this year, and hopefully the podcast will be growing and we'll have more social media interaction and the whole nine as the podcast grows throughout 2018. So we're excited about what's about to happen. As I mentioned before, it's a lot of things going on in 2018, not only in sports and music and entertainment and relationships, but you know, it's I think 2018 is going to be the year of black excellence. That's kind of been my theme. I'm not a big resolutions guy. I don't make a whole lot of resolutions, and you know, they're hard to keep, and most people don't keep them anyway. I just like to do better. At the end of the day, I like to do better, hopefully be more successful, hopefully, you know, be a good father and be a better sibling and all those wonderful things that we like to talk about and say. But I just want to do better in 2018 in every aspect of my life, and hopefully that leads me to be, you know, more profitable, more successful, whatever it may be. But I think 2018 is going to be the year of black excellence. I see more and more of our African-American leaders, whether it's in sports or entertainment or even in politics, starting to ingratiate themselves with other African-Americans to try to build something successful. And we'll get into some of that as we talk about some of our sports and entertainment topics today. But I'm excited about that. I'm excited about how we are starting to take over the culture. We've always ruled popular culture in America, but I like to see us now starting to realize our power and to take full ownership of that. And you see it, you know, technology has opened up the door for people of color to start to be able to own their content and control their content, whether it's through podcasts, whether it's through, you know, other mediums like YouTube, or you know, you have, you know, Diddy with Revolt, Jay-Z with Tidal, all of these. So we're starting to control and own our content and really starting to control the culture that we've always created, and starting to make it, you know, financially profitable for our people. So, and hopefully that's used to invest back into our community to give others the opportunity. And that's, I'm hoping that this platform grows and is successful so that I can give others the opportunity to be a part of it as well, and introduce them to this platform where they can, you know, use their personality and their comedic senses or whatever it may be to find another way for them to be profitable as well. I'm excited, ready to get into this new episode of Get a Grip. So let's get right to it. I want to start with some sports. And we'll start with the NFL, as the NFL regular season is wrapping up, or has already wrapped up, and we're about to get into the first weekend of the playoffs. I live in Atlanta, and obviously the Atlanta Falcons have somehow made their way into the playoffs after a clutch win against the Carolina Panthers last weekend. So everybody here is excited, but as you guys know, I'm a huge Philadelphia Eagles fan. And my Eagles are the number one seed in the NFC. We haven't played well since our starting quarterback Carson Wentz got hurt, and we have Nick Foles, who I believe in. I think he is serviceable enough for us to make a playoff run, but our defense, everybody's gonna have to step up. Defense, running game, special teams, everybody has to, wide receivers, they have to step up around Nick Foles in order for us to make some noise. But this is an exciting time of year in the NFL as the playoffs get started, and everybody in my city is going to be rooting for the Atlanta Falcons. We obviously, my team has a bye, so we don't play this weekend, but it's going to be a lot of good games this weekend. Starting on Saturday, you got Kansas City. The Kansas City Chiefs are playing the Tennessee Titans. You have the Atlanta Falcons who are playing the LA Rams. Those are your two Saturday games. And on Sunday, you have the Jacksonville Jaguars, who hadn't been in the playoffs since 1999. So this is their first time in a long time. They're playing the Buffalo Bills, who haven't made the playoffs in a long, long time as well. So you have, that's a very interesting game, because those two teams haven't had a lot of success here recently. And so they're getting a chance to face off against each other on Sunday in the wild card. And then that's in the AFC on Sunday. And then in the NFC on Sunday, you have the Saints, the New Orleans Saints, playing the Carolina Panthers, two division rivals from the NFC South. This will be their third time playing this year, and New Orleans has won both of the previous games. So it's going to be interesting. It's hard to beat a team three times in any sport. But I think with New Orleans playing at home, it's going to be very difficult for Carolina to go in there and beat them at home. Carolina didn't make the playoffs last year, and they did. Cam Newton had somewhat of a better year this year. The defense played a lot better this year than they played last year. But New Orleans has just been on this incredible roll. They started off the season very slow. I think they were 0-2 or 0-3 to start the season, and they ran off like an 8-game winning streak. And it really started when their defense started to play well. Obviously, Drew Brees is one of the best quarterbacks to ever do it, but their defense was struggling, and I think the offense, was trying to find their way. They traded away Adrian Peterson, which gave other guys, Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara, the opportunity to blossom and have success, and you started to see that success. So New Orleans seems to be one of the hot teams, but I think it's going to come down to my Eagles, and I think that my Eagles will face, I'm thinking we may face either New Orleans or I think we'll face the winner of that New Orleans-Carolina game in the NFC Championship. And in the AFC, I think it's going to come down to New England and Pittsburgh. I think those are going to be the teams you see in the AFC Championship. And I think ultimately, it's going to be my Eagles. Obviously, I'm going to pick my Eagles against. And this may surprise some people, but I think it might be Pittsburgh. I think it may be the Pennsylvania Super Bowl this year. The Philadelphia Eagles versus the Pittsburgh Steelers, and obviously I'm picking my Eagles to win it all this year. I'm doing that with my heart. Even though we were the number one seed, we did lose our starting quarterback, so this is a really emotional pick. But I believe in my Eagles. I think this is our year with all of the supporting cast that Nick Foles has, with the defense playing as well as they've played throughout the year. I think this is the year my Eagles can go to the Super Bowl and actually win it this year. So all of you haters, all of you Eagles haters, that's what it is. Just get ready to be even more upset after we get this chip this year. I'm looking forward to the playoffs. It's going to be exciting over the next few weeks as the NFL playoffs unfold. Next, we're going to get into some NBA topics. Stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. people will say that the NBA season doesn't officially start until after Christmas because you got NFL football going on, you got college football going on. So people's attention don't switch to the NBA until after all of the popular Christmas games. And those games have happened, and now I think the NBA is really officially into full swing. A few years back when they had the lockout, the NBA season didn't start until the first games were right around Christmas, and I think that was a good time because it gave people the chance to kind of get through the NFL regular season and then kick off the NBA season. But this is kind of the time when people really start to focus on the NBA, even though there's been a lot of great NBA stories so far. With, you know, obviously in the East, you got the Cavs and Boston, especially the intrigue as Kyrie got traded to Boston and, you know, had his issues in Cleveland and, you know, whether they were LeBron or with the organization. You know, there's different stories floating around about that. But I think Kyrie just really wanted his own team, got tired of playing under LeBron's shadow. And he's playing well this year. So you have that story going in the East. You got Philly. With that young squad who's playing relatively well. You have, you know, the Milwaukee Bucks with the Greek Freak, the New York Knicks with Porzingis, and there are a lot of great basketball stories. In the West, you got, you know, OKC, you know, how's Russell and Melo and Paul George, are they meshing? And they went on a short winning streak, and now, you know, they've struggled. They've hit a hard patch here and struggled some, but I think they're going to be fine. I mean, I think they're all great basketball players, and I think eventually they'll figure out how to play together, and I think you'll see that as the season develops even more into February and March. I think you'll start to see that team kind of hit their stride. The problem with OKC is that they don't have a bench. They don't have a lot of good players that can provide scoring off of the bench, and I think because of that lack of depth, that's what's ultimately going to hurt them, especially when it comes to playoff time. I mean, Minnesota's playing extremely well, and Jimmy Butler was kind of the missing piece for them. They had a lot of young talent already on their team with Karl Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins, but I think bringing in, you know, veteran guys, especially a veteran all-star like Jimmy Butler, Jeff Teague, who's a veteran point guard, really helped that team mature and develop. And I think right now they're the number 4 seed in the West. Houston is playing awesome. I mean, the Chris Paul, James Harden dynamic has worked out really well, even though Harden's out right now with an injury. It's worked out well. I mean, you got two guys who, you know, can play off of each other, and they played off of each other really well. And, you know, they're the second seed in the West right now behind, obviously, Golden State. You know, they're still the team to beat. When you got a healthy KD and Steph Curry and Thompson and Draymond Green, that's a very, very difficult team to deal with. And they still can score. They do a relatively good job defensively. I don't think they're the defensive juggernaut that everybody says. I just think they score so well. They put a lot of pressure on teams. I think I may have mentioned this in my previous podcast, that they score the basketball so well that they put a lot of pressure on other teams to score, which forces them sometimes to take bad shots and things like that. But their offense really aids their defense. And so, you know, it's going to be a very, very exciting NBA season, especially as we get into February and March and things start to get serious. The players start to take it more seriously as it gets closer to playoff time. The teams start to fight for position. I still think the favorites are Cleveland and Golden State. I mean, those are the two teams that I think we're going to see again for the fourth time. But I think it's going to be very, very difficult. Last year, both of those teams blew through the playoffs. Golden State didn't lose a game in the Western Conference playoffs. Cleveland only lost one game in the Eastern Conference playoffs. And so I think this is going to be a very difficult role for both teams. I think the West is better with Houston and Minnesota. I think the East is better with Washington, with Boston, obviously, and with Toronto. I think you're going to see it be challenging for Cleveland and Golden State to get back to the finals. But I think because LeBron is the best in the world right now, and because Golden State has the best group of players playing together in the world right now, those are the two teams we're going to see come June in the NBA Finals. We're going to talk about Diddy and the Panthers coming up. I started this episode of the Get a Grip podcast talking about how I believe that 2018 is going to be the year of Black excellence. And I believe we're going to see it in every aspect of American society, even more than we've seen it before. This is kind of our Harlem Renaissance, so to speak. And recently in the sports world, the Panthers owner Jerry Richardson got into some trouble. Obviously, sexual allegations abound around him, and sexual abuse allegations where he has abused his position when it comes to how he has communicated with some women, and it ultimately it forced him to be in a position where he's going to sell the team at the end of the season. And you know, we saw Diddy, Puff Daddy, Puffy, Sean Combs, we know who he is. He put up a post about wanting to own the Panthers, wanting to buy the Panthers, wanting to be part of that process. And I think it's a beautiful thing. Number one, we need Black ownership in the NFL. 80% of the league is African American. I mean, they have profited off of the efforts of African Americans for as long as African Americans have been allowed to play in the NFL. We're the best players, we're the best athletes in the world. And I think it's time that Black ownership is visible in the NFL. And why not a guy like Puffy? He's had a lot of success in the entertainment world. And obviously, I think he'll have to bring on some partners to be able to make that play. But you saw guys like Steph Curry and, you know, Jay-Z, and then other people chime in about wanting to be a part of that process. And I think it's a beautiful thing. I think it's time for us to, as I mentioned, to start to control, you know, culture, whether it's sports, entertainment, TV, film, whatever it is. It's time for us to start to take control of our own story and start to profit off of it properly, as we should. So I love to see a group that includes Diddy and other African Americans own the Charlotte Panthers. I think that would be the Carolina Panthers. I think that would be an excellent, you know, addition to the NFL ownership group. And the NFL ownership group has been, you know, the white boy club for a long time. I mean, you see Black ownership in the NBA with Michael Jordan and the Charlotte Hornets. You see Magic Johnson, who is an executive and has some ownership interest in the LA Lakers right now. So you see African Americans. You see Derek Jeter have an ownership stake in the Miami Marlins. Magic Johnson has a small ownership stake in the LA Dodgers. So the NFL is lagging behind when it comes to African American ownership. And I'd love to see a group that, as I mentioned, that includes, obviously Diddy would have to bring on other partners, and maybe somebody who's an African American from the business world. But I would love it to be an all African American group who made a presentation who made a realistic bid to buy the Carolina Panthers. I think it's about time. I think it's probably overdue. I think, you know, we need more Black coaches in the NFL. I mean, they have the Rooney Rule in place, which was put into place to require teams to at least interview a person of color for the job. But I think a lot of times teams take advantage of that and they just interview somebody of color to get it out of the way, not really having any real intention of hiring an African American for the job. So I think the league needs to do something to maybe enforce that rule more. And not so much in the sense of making teams, obviously you want teams to consider African American candidates, but making the teams have a real interest in an African-American candidate and giving that African-American candidate a realistic chance to get the job, not a handout, but giving it to somebody that's qualified and giving that person that's qualified a real opportunity to be a coach on that team. So again, this is the year of Black excellence for African-Americans, and I'm speaking it to existence. Hashtag Black excellence in 2018. Let's do it. Get a Grip podcast. You know what it is.